Chapter 14. Tuesday. Next Thursday. The dismantling of SO-27 had some peculiar and unforeseen consequences, not least the legalizing of lethal force within libraries, for the maintenance of the collections and public order. Originally intended as a deterrent to thieves, the legislation quickly became known as the Shush Law, when overenthusiastic librarians invoked a violent intervention for loud talking. Libraries have never been quieter, and theft and vandalism dropped by 72%. Moby Drake, Librarians, Heroes of the New Generation. I was searched before leaving the library. No one was exempt. The stealing and selling of rare antiquarian books was still big business, and the library wasn't taking any chances. Recently, a thief who'd attempted to steal a first edition of Dialogue Concerning the Two Chief World Systems had been shot dead. Luckily for the librarian who fired the shot, the potential thief had fallen within the library boundary, allowing the killing to be categorized as justifiable lethal force by a state-registered librarian in the course of his or her duties. A misdemeanor that required only a few forms to be filled in. As it says on the T-shirts, I don't scare easily. I'm a librarian. Which was the polite version of the original. Don't give me any of your shit. I'm a librarian. I took the longer way back toward the Brunel Centre and was just passing the Swindon branch of Booktastic when I remembered I had walked that way specifically to drop in at the tattooist's and had forgotten again. It was a half mile back, and I could drop in when I drove past later. It was probably the disopyramidol making me forgetful. On a whim, I walked into Booktastic to check on whether my books were still core stock. I took the lift to the third floor and was relieved to find they were. Relieved not for personal me, but for written me inside the books, to whom I owed a huge debt of gratitude, a debt I hoped to repay by keeping her well read. I had changed my tune over the fictionalized account of my life, now being broadly in favor rather than wishing it was quietly remaindered, or better still, pulped. I placed the book covers out at eye level, noted that there was another in the series, told a browsing couple that the books were probably worth a look if you've nothing better to do, then heard the cathedral clock begin to chime midday. Soon after I trotted down from the third floor at Booktastic, and made my way towards Shabitat, where Landon was hoping to buy one of their huge trademark flip-date clocks. I found him in the glassware section. The trouble about having a huge house was that it was easier to double or triple up on things rather than carry them from the kitchen to the dining room and back again, which meant we needed three of everything.
"You can get an entire set of glassware for only 50 quid, said Landon, looking at me for a moment before digging out his cell phone.
"It's ugly," I said.
"Ah, yes," replied Landon, dialing a number. "But before it was expensive and ugly, and now it's cheap and ugly, so everything's changed."
"Has it?"
"Sure. What was your new office like?"
"Pretty cool."
"Describe it to me."
"Windows, a door, a phone, a large red one, a hotline." I narrowed my eyes as I tried to remember what else I had seen. I bumped into Jim Finisterre. "Who are you calling?"
"Stig."
"What do you want to talk to him about?"
"Just a job we have to do, all three of us."
"Can I know?"
"It's a surprise."
"I like surprises."
"Stig,"
said Landon.
"It's Landon. We need you."
He paused for a moment and looked at me.
"We're in Shabitat, glassware section." "Yes, I know they're ugly. See you soon."
He snapped the phone shut and looked at me again, with his head to one side. There was a brief silence, not one of those companionable silences that are quite enjoyable, but an empty, cold silence of people soon strangers. And that was when I had a peculiar feeling, one I hadn't had for a while. "Landon?"
"Yes?"
I leaned closer and lowered my voice. "I want to make love to you."
"What? Here?"
"Well, no. We could find a hotel." I've not felt it this strong from well before the accident. Probably that holiday in Greece, when you'd lost 10 pounds and we had dinner at Arturo's. On our own, no kids. Landon said nothing and stared at me. I frowned. It wasn't a bad feeling, quite the opposite, of course. But it was unusual, and that worried me. Even following the accident, I still wanted him in a that-would-be-nice-if-I-weren't-feeling-so-shitty sort of way. But this was like being a teenager again, that sort of lusty yearning that is born of fresh discovery and young hearts bursting to be free. "Say something," I said.
"What do you want me to say?"
"Anything. Me too would be good for starters, rapidly followed by does the Finnis Hotel rent rooms by the hour? To which the answer is, yes, notorious for it." Landon gave me a weary half-smile.
"If I were to say nothing should disturb," he asked, "what would you say in reply?"
"Nothing should disturb us in the Finnis?"
"No, it's a password. The one we swapped on parting less than 2 hours ago."
"Oh, yes. Nothing should disturb that. No, I can't remember."
"And why do you think that might be?"
He said it in a sarcastic manner that he normally would never have used on me. Not unless we were having a serious balls-out, door-slamming, I-don't-know-why-I-sodding-married-you row. But then the penny dropped, and I looked down. I wasn't holding a walking stick. I felt no pain, and I was standing upright, without a stoop. No wonder Landon could tell I wasn't the real one straight away. I hadn't walked this well for a while. "Shit," I muttered. "I've been replaced." And I looked stupidly around to see if the real me might be somewhere close by. I wasn't, so I looked back at Landon, who raised an eyebrow.
"This is a novel approach," he said. "A synthetic aware that it is a synthetic."
"Wait, wait," I said, knowing only too well what we did with synthetics. "This is different. I'm me. I'm conscious. I have some of the real me's memories. Maybe not all of them, but some, and enough."
"You say you have," said Landon,
placing his hand in the pocket where he kept his pistol.
"But that's what you're programmed to think. Try to make a run for it, and I'll drop you where you stand. The first time we killed one of you, it was hard to explain, until the second one turned up."
"That's what Stig's coming to do, isn't it?"
"As Divisional Chief of SO-13, he's legally empowered to destroy unlicensed non-evolutionary life forms. And that's what you are, my friend. But before we get to that, what do you want? Why does Goliath want to replace my wife with one of their own?"
"I don't know. Or at least, if I do know, it's not readily apparent to me. You'd really kill me."
"Without a second thought. Still want to make love to me?"
"In an odd kind of way, yes," I said, shifting my weight from one foot to the other. "But listen, if this is me and I am Thursday, but weirdly in another body, you might actually kill me for real. And that might be it. This could be the final vessel for my consciousness."
"Fascinating," remarked Landon. "You must be a Mark 7 or something. None of the others were so articulate."
"Or knew they were synthetics?"
"Right. But first things first. What did you do with the real Thursday? It'll save a lot of time."
"I don't know."
"You must know. They always know."
"No, I really don't. I have no recollection of being activated."
"So you say," said Landon suspiciously.
"No, to me, I'm me."
"In that case, think back to what you can remember. I want my wife back."
"Okay, okay. I was still in pain and had a stick when I left the library. It can only be between there and here."
"Did you stop anywhere?"
I paused, deep in thought, trying to figure out when real me stopped being real me and started being synthetic me. "Nope," I said. "Nothing."
"It good likeness," said Stig, who had just arrived. "But why made no attempt to stoop and limp like real Thursday?" It's much more impressive than that, said Landon, referring to me as though I were the latest model of car or something. It's trying to tell me it has the real one's consciousness and partial memory.
Stig peered closer at me.
The craftsmanship, different to others, more hurried. It thinks it is her?
It is me inside, Stig, I said. We met yesterday at the Spec Ops office.
Anyone could know that. What did we speak of?
I tried to think of the conversation I'd had with him. It's kind of hazy, I admitted, as if the handover between real me and synthetic me isn't complete. It's like when you wake up and you're not sure who you are or where you are, or even your own name. You know how rock legends spend the first 2 hours of each day.
That sounds more like Thursday, said Stig. Yes, replied Landon. None of them ever had a sense of humor before.
Shit, I said.
What? Asked Landon.
I can remember more of the password. Nothing should disturb that condor something. And Stig, we talked about what I'd been doing that morning, and something about shampoo being in a different bottle.
Did that happen? Asked Landon. Yes.
And the shrink's name was Dr. Chumley, I said, as memories came seeping through. And he gave me a nut 4 because I was hoping to run SO27. Shazza said to tell Friday that it would have been seriously good.
Is that true? Asked Stig.
Landon nodded, and I stared at the pair of them. They looked, well, spooked. None of the other synthetics had been anything like this.
What all this mean? Stig asked Landon. I don't know.
I can feel the memories filter in, like I'm waking up to a new body, I said. It feels good, too, like I've never felt before. Ask me a question.
What's 3,598 multiplied by 9?
32,382, I replied without pausing. Do you want to hear about every single monarch of England before the First Republic? I can give you precise dates of when they ruled, the name of their consorts, and an estimation of their weight, with a 2.3% margin of error. Give me a piece of paper. Landon passed me a receipt from his pocket, and in a brief flurry of dexterity, it was an elegant origami swan. I can do this, too. I picked up a glass vase and tossed it above my head. I closed my eyes, waited until I thought it would be coming back down, and caught it in midair. I opened my eyes again. It's like being Wonder Woman, I said, only without the stupid costume. Don't look up.
Why not?
Asked Landon, not unreasonably. There's a ninja assassin hiding in the rafters, but don't worry, there's no danger to us. He's been there for 6 weeks already, probably waiting for a Romanian who can't keep his mouth shut.
You saw him?
I heard him, and one of his eyelashes just landed on your shoulder. Want to see me juggle? Landon and Stig stared at me, as my old memories filtered through to their new home. I could recall that no synthetic Thursday had ever acted this way. From where I was standing, this one seemed not just as good as a human, but better. I could have taken on Landon and Stig there and then if I'd wanted to. But so far as I could tell, I was still Thursday, and Thursdays don't beat up their husbands and best friends. Would you excuse me one moment, I said. I have to find me. Without waiting for an answer, I ran out of the glassware department, with Stig struggling to keep up. I raced out of the store, accelerated fast down the concourse, and felt a surge of raw elation as my legs ran as they had never run before. I was stronger, smarter, fitter, and faster. And if this one had never had children, my stomach was probably joyously flat, too. I skidded to a halt outside Booktastic and paused for a moment, hardly out of breath. I was still thinking when Stig arrived a few moments later.
You're fast, he said. Really fast.
When I left here, I didn't have my stick with me, I said, and I ran down the stairs. But I remember swearing over the lack of a handrail as I went in, and also slapped another patch on my arse in the loo. so I must have been the previous me then.
Booktastic big, said Stig. Why you enter?
Probably putting the Thursday Next Chronicles face out. I've done it before. I ran up to speculative fiction on the third floor, again with Stig labouring behind. I found my way to the Next Chronicles, but found no one here, not even hidden behind the sofas. We started to search around the recesses of the bookshop, as the place was fairly labyrinthine. It wasn't unusual to be lost in its twisting corridors, and once a Henry James fanatic had been locked in for the entire weekend.
"What's going on?"
asked Landon as he lumbered out of the elevator, panting. "I remember now that she's in the stockroom," I said, pushing the door from its hinges. We found a pale figure of a woman in her underwear, hidden behind a pallet of Colwyn Bay's latest book. She looked terrible. One leg was thinner than the other, and badly scarred, and her skin was a pasty shade, the colour of hospital inpatients. She was unconscious. I'd forgotten how tired and old I looked. Landon checked the unconscious me for vital signs.
"Alive?" asked Stig. "Very much so, just unconscious."
Landon slapped me around the face, first softly, then harder. This didn't seem to have much effect, so he pinched me, twice. Nothing.
"Any ideas?"
he asked. "The upload takes less than half an hour," I said, not knowing how I knew. "It's a neural bandwidth issue, and is almost complete." I was now getting the deep subconscious stuff, the memories of childhood, the time our hamster ate its young. I was only 8. Never forgot that. Then other stuff started to come in too, stuff I thought I'd forgotten. Arguments with Anton long before he died in the Crimea, and my mother crying for her husband the first time he died. But through it all, there was one thing that was strong in the front of my mind. This wasn't me. It was subtly different in ways impossible to explain. It was wonderful, but disturbing too. "I know what we have to do," I said quietly. "But first, I have to prove to you that this was really me." I took out a pen and scribbled a note on the back of my old Skyrail ticket. I took a step forward and slipped it into Landon's trouser pocket. I hugged him, placed my cheek to his, and whispered in his ear, "I love you. Now, do it."